Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on March 31st, 2020. This is the ninth week or ninth chapter of our 2020 Truth of Happiness Dhamma study, and this talk is on karma in rebirth. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So, tonight is the ninth week or ninth chapter of our 12-week or 12-chapter study based on my book, The Truth of Happiness. This week, we're going to be looking at karma and rebirth, and it naturally follows from last week's, I think we actually spent four classes on the eighth week or the eighth chapter on dependent origination and five clinging aggregates. And so we learned last week, and we've been learning all along, that the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta is the Buddha's teachings on how stress and suffering arises, individual stress and suffering arises from ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And then the five clinging aggregates are the Buddha's teaching that described the actual experience of stress and suffering rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And he describes that as five clinging aggregates. And we're going to, and the article that I linked as a supportive sutta, the Karma Sutta, is something I'm going to teach a few weeks after we're finished with this study. But in that sutta, the Buddha makes the clear distinction between the aggregates and the five clinging aggregates, which teaches us that the for the aggregates to actually cling together takes a direct action on the individual, and that action is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, which relates directly to karma. And in some of the writings, you might see the word kama, K-A-M-M-A, and karma. Over the years, I've kind of mixed them up, but I've settled back on karma simply because it's the most accepted word. Other words in my translation, I stuck with the Pali as opposed to the modern Sanskrit, but here, I'll just be using the word karma. So karma, the word literally means action. And despite the popular belief that karma is an action that's performed against an individual, it has nothing to do with that. And you think about what that is, the popular belief that karma is some type of grand universal spiritual behavior modification process, giving us gifts when we're doing something good and punishing us when we do something bad. And of course, nothing could be further from the Buddha's teachings, because the Buddha's teachings don't rely on and discourage us from grasping after any type of external agency, including an agency that might engage with me through punishment and reward as a way of controlling me, which is how most of karma is presented. And the pop representations to karma, you know, you'll all recognize somebody has a bad day or they got bad karma. I remember, probably because this happened around the same time I started teaching, the belief that karma is a punishment is such a hurtful belief. And there's nothing that so exemplifies that than two things. One, I grew up during the AIDS crisis, and back then in the early 80s, and I was pretty involved. I was going into hospitals and actually talking with people, which nobody did back then. And that was taught that people got AIDS because they were gay, and as a karmic retribution. And then about the time that I started teaching, there was the great, maybe a little before, the great floods in Japan caused by a tsunami. And even on the news reports, there was some insinuation that the people that drowned deserved it because it was their karma. There can be nothing more hurtful and nothing more contradictory than what the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught karma as a very important tool, and to understand that it has nothing to do with any outside agency. It has to do with our own actions. Okay, now after that long preface. The Buddha's words, this is right from the beginning of our chapter. I am the owner of my actions, the heir to my actions. I am born of my actions and related through my actions. My actions will determine the fortune or misfortune in my life. And of course, we know from understanding the Buddha's teachings, everything relates to dependent origination and Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha's not teaching, the Buddha's not teaching that if we have any type of lack in our life, or if we're feeling some kind of self-referential pain that something's happening to us, we understand immediately that the reason why I'm suffering in this moment is not because of something happening to me. And it's not really because I'm living in the world. It's because I'm living in the world from a mind rooted in ignorance. I'm experiencing stress and suffering, which some people will say is karma, because of my own ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Once I develop understanding of Four Noble Truths, there's no action that would lead to stress and suffering. Karma has ended. In fact, the Buddha describes that in a few different suttas as the cessation of karma is the result of awakening. But it's not something that should be our goal, and it's not something that is a substantial benchmark in our Dhamma practice. It's simply a consequence. It's like refined mindfulness is rooted in a right meditation practice, developing concentration. The cessation of karma is not based on anything else except the development of the Dhamma. My words, karma and rebirth are closely linked concepts of the Buddha's teachings. Despite modern presentations that the Buddha taught karma and rebirth only to relate to the prevalent beliefs of his time, and so are not useful or relevant teachings now, understanding karma and rebirth is essential to understanding the Buddha's teachings. In fact, it's kind of the whole point. You heard me say last week that, in essence, anatta, five clinging aggregates, nama-rupa, self-referential views, and karma are really all kind of the same thing. Five clinging aggregates. This is all the experience of suffering. If you want to know what your karma is, take a look in the mirror, because that what we're experiencing right now is our karma. It has nothing to do with what might happen tomorrow, and it has nothing to do with something that might have happened yesterday. Right here, right now, is karma. The reason why that is significant, and we've learned as Dhamma practitioners, that the only time or place, we were talking to Tim earlier about the space-time difference there, the only time that we can practice a Dhamma is right here and right now. There's no Dhamma yesterday, and there can be no Dhamma tomorrow, because it's not based on speculation. So karma is occurring right now. Karma and our Dhamma practice are unfolding in this moment. And so in that way, karma and the state of our Dhamma practice is the same thing. The Buddha's teachings on karma and rebirth refuted many of the common beliefs of his time and helped clarify the purpose and experience of awakening. So many, many modern teachers, and I think they do this because they simply don't understand what karma is, they dismiss it away as an anachronistic teaching, something that's just simply not relevant to our time. When without an understanding of karma, the Dhamma is not relevant. The Buddha's Dhamma is not relevant. The reason why the Buddha taught something called karma is the same reason he used the word anatta. He used the word anatta, a common word of his time, but in a completely different way to signify in the teachings prevalent during the Buddha's time in modern Buddhism, anatta was seen as a phrase that says, I am not, atta is the overarching creative force, if you will. I'm not going to get it too deep into all the variations on that. And anatta is simply saying, well, I'm not it, but it's said in a degrading way. In other words, there's something much grander than I am out there that I'm aspiring to. Of course, the Buddha teaches just the opposite. He teaches us that who we are is complete and whole human beings, and we can never be anything other than that. But that's where our freedom lies. Any teaching other than that is a distraction, and it's hurtful. So again, the Buddha used that word karma to teach something that was centrally significant to most of the believers of his time, to point out to them a very, very serious wrong view that they were holding, the idea that karma is some part of an external system. Understanding these teachings as they were originally presented and in the context of the Four Noble Truths brings insight and clarity to the Eightfold Path and can help one recognize contradictory and confusing Buddhist teachings that are later developed adaptations and accommodations to his original teachings. What I mean by that is, if you want to know if a modern teaching is relevant to what the Buddha teaches, simply weigh it against dependent origination and Four Noble Truths and this understanding of karma. If it doesn't fit, it's simply not what the Buddha taught. And it doesn't mean that they're bad in the sense of evil teachings. It's simply more of a distraction. The Buddha taught, excuse me. Did anybody hear that burp? I shouldn't ask that question. The Buddha taught this simple path to always be mindful of our actions, to always be mindful of our karma. That's why it takes a well-concentrated mind developed through jhana practice and the refined mindfulness of the entire Eightfold Path to be able to see our actions in a dispassionate way, to be able to see our karma unfolding without reacting to it, which would only create more karma. Karma and rebirth are conditions arising from ignorance. Karma means action. Karma is in no way punishment as a result of arbitrary judgments from a supreme being. Karma is not the consequence from a vague, independent, from an independent moral, ethical, spiritual system. Karma is not a condition imposed on you. You alone are the cause of your karma, and you alone are the cause of rebirth. And I'll get more into this on Saturday's talk. I won't get too deep into rebirth today. But rebirth in this context relates directly to karma, and it relates to the actions that I'm taking right here, right now. In other words, what I'm holding in mind right now, if it's framed by the Eightfold Path in a mind that is well concentrated and can hold those principles, then the next moment will be a moment inclined towards awakening. That's the action that I'm taking in this moment. That's the karma that I'm developing in myself to incline my mind towards awakening, to keep developing the Eightfold Path as my framework for living in the world, as opposed to continuing to my own ignorance of Four Noble Truths, which then resolves in this moment of giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. And so the Dhamma can be seen in just that way. It can only be practiced right here, right now. I need a mind united in my body, and I need to be mindful of my actions in this moment. And really, that can be only one of two ways that those actions can unfold. Are they framed by the Eightfold Path, or are my actions continuing to be framed by ignorance? If they're framed by the Eightfold Path, then I'm continuing my own development towards awakening. That's the action that I can take moment by moment. That's the important teachings on karma and rebirth. So let me continue. Karma should not be viewed simply as what is unfolding in your life. Karma is the present unfolding of past intentional actions, moderated by present state of understanding and quality of mindfulness. That relates to what I just said. Again, karma is not some type of punishment or reward system. I'm going to say over what I just said again. Karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional actions, moderated by the present level of mindfulness, or what I'm holding in mind. What that means is that my life and every human life has its own type of momentum, and that momentum is driven by what I'm holding in mind. And so if I continue, and again, it relates to what I'm talking about for a few minutes now, if I continue to hold in mind the momentum that brought me to a place that was confusing, full of delusion, and very stressful, then I can only hope to give birth to that again. Again, if I'm holding in mind in this moment the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, then I'm inclining my mind towards awakening. That's the action that I'm taking within the framework of my karma right now. In other words, what I'm holding in mind is the Eightfold Path, so my present karma is inclined now towards awakening. Karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional acts moderated by present level of mindfulness or refined mindfulness, meaning what I'm holding in mind right now. And ultimately, we understand as awakened human beings that every experience that I can ever have will always be framed by what I'm holding in mind or the view that I'm holding of that. And that relates again to last week's teaching on the five clinging aggregates. The five clinging aggregates are only clinging aggregates if it is my view and my intention to cling them together. As our present state of mindfulness and understanding animate our current actions, our current actions are moderating the effects of past actions. So again, we're not taking a mindful action right now and having some ability to now reach in the past and undo it. We're simply undoing the conditioned thinking in this moment that would have us recreate the same experience, whether it's through our own actions or interpreting external events through that confused mind. Is that clear to everyone? Yes? Okay, I think you're all shaking your head. What this means is a key to these entire teachings. Through mindfulness imbued with wisdom and motivated by right intention, the unfolding of karma in this moment can be inclined towards release and awakening. Karma does not predetermine life. Mindful and well-concentrated intention within the framework of the Eightfold Path develops release from craving and clinging and the cessation of suffering. The Buddha's words, whatever one continues to pursue with their thinking becomes the inclination of their awareness or their mindfulness. I'm going to say that again. Whatever one continues to pursue with their thinking becomes the inclination of their mindfulness. The inclination. What am I feeding into this next moment? Being mindful of right intention and abandoning thinking imbued with craving, clinging, and sensuality inclines the mind towards release. So right intention is the intention that in this moment to recognize and abandon craving and clinging to anything, objects, events, views, and ideas. All of the events of life are not the result of individual karma. Most of what occurs in one's life is simply worldly conditions and described in the First Noble Truth as stress. This coronavirus, COVID-19, is a perfect example of that. If I get COVID-19, it's not because this bug sought me out over 9 billion people and attacked me just to get me. I get COVID-19 as a consequence of living in the world and maybe some of my own unskillful behavior, but it's still up to me. It's still my actions that will determine if I get COVID-19. Another good example is if you just stay isolated, you can't get it. There was a really great doctor, and I wish I could remember his name because he was a head of a worldwide infectious disease think tank. His name is right there. But anyway, he said there's two things that every human being should do to ensure that they can never get the coronavirus or any other infectious disease. He said, wash your hands. But he said, even more so, if you want to guarantee that you can never get coronavirus, he said, simply stop touching your face. That's an action that we can take that directly affects my experience in the world and now my direct experience with COVID-19. And it's just practical teachings on how to live in the world, isn't it? So if I find out tomorrow that I got COVID-19, it's not because I'm being punished for a life that I've lived, this life or a past life. It's not because I don't have the right Dhamma practice or I'm not praying to the right gods, as some people are saying today. If I get COVID-19, it's because I have a human life, period. And maybe I've made some mistakes in my behavior, maybe not. But again, just using the example, there's nothing personal that can happen to any human being that could be described as personal. Nothing. Everything is arbitrary. And everything is predetermined at the same time, meaning our experience of the arbitrariness of life is predetermined by what we're holding in mind. Or we can let go of all conditioned thinking and experience each and every moment. And then our actions are feeding to a moment-by-moment life that is giving birth, rebirth, to a meaningful moment, no matter what it is. No matter what it is, each moment in life becomes meaningful. Why? Because as a human being, I am now finally present for what's occurring. Every single event, every single thought is meaningful then. I'll continue. Most of what occurs in one's life is simply worldly conditions as described in the First Noble Truth. There is stress. Reaction to impersonal events will create additional karma and further condition mind. We learn through dependent origination that as we come into contact with the world through our sixth sense base and that sixth sense of consciousness still rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, what I'm going to create is another conditioned response, further conditioning my ignorance towards further ignorance. That's what the Buddha described in the Nagara Sutta. It's what we are as Dhamma practitioners starting to recognize as our own feedback loop of self-referential views stuck in that ignorance that we're insisting on maintaining. And we're insisting on maintaining it by continued, we could say, wrong actions. Or we could develop right actions right? That's the second moral and ethical factor of the Eightfold Path, by the way, right action, as it relates to the entire Dhamma practice. But what is right action? Right action, when we look at it as through the Buddhist teachings, is action that is framed by right view, meaning it is an action itself that is harmless towards ourselves and others. At a very, very subtle level, we realize that if I'm going to be truly harmless towards myself and others, I got to awaken. I have to become a fully awakened human being. And as we understand that, that's not something that's out of reach. If I want to bring cessation to my karma, to not having control of my moment-by-moment life, meaning control of how I'm experiencing my life, I have to awaken. And the most incredible thing, the thing that is most fortunate in my life is I found the Dhamma that actually teaches me awakening. And we're all doing it. We have a path to take control of our karma. That's another reason why I started using karma, because karma could be confusing. It's not karma. Take control of my karma and end in this moment giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. Let me continue just a little bit more. Reaction arises from wrong views of self, and it is wrong views that initiate and proliferate karma. Once all wrong views of self are abandoned, further karma ends. As with the Buddha's original teachings, karma is taught in the context of Four Noble Truths with the sole goal of the cessation of suffering. In this context, karma describes the ongoing suffering rooted in ignorance and reinforced by wrong view. Excuse me, I got to put on my glasses for a second and check something. My magnifying glasses. These are 10x. Okay. Let me continue. The Buddha's words. Karma should be understood. So what I can remember right now hearing teachers telling me face to face when I'd asked the question, karma is something you don't need to know. Don't worry about it. The Buddha's words. Karma should be understood. The cause of karma should be understood. The diversity of the results of karma should be understood. Diversity of the result reflects on the many, many distracting ways that we see karma unfolding as this reward and punishment system. The diversity of it, it's not just one thing. We create an infinite result of our fabricated view of karma. To keep that on, it's such a perfect vehicle to continue to ignore our own ignorance. The diversity of the results of karma should be understood. Cessation of karma should be understood. What does the Buddha mean by that? Just like he says we should understand each of the noble truths, he's saying that understanding comes not from intellectualizing the concept, but having the direct experience of the cessation of karma. That's how we understand it. The path developing the cessation of karma should be understood. What is the path? It's the Eightfold Path. Notice that these are the same words that Buddha uses to describe the truth of suffering. Karma unfolding, whether experienced as pleasure or pain, is an aspect of dukkha and originates in craving and clinging. This brings dependent origination, meaning ignorance resulting in suffering, and right intention into understanding and ending karma. The Buddha continues, intention is karma. With intention, you could say with wrong intention, with intention, one does karma through thought, word, and deed. Again, in this moment, the Buddha is now teaching us, this is where you apply the Dhamma, right here in your actions in the present. Not in the past, not what you hope to do, right here, right now. And what is the cause that initiates karma? Contact, relating directly back to dependent origination. You remember, I think it's the sixth or seventh, between the sixth and seventh step. That from contact with our sixth sense base, from a mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, comes craving. And from that craving comes clinging and maintaining. And from that follows all manner of stress and suffering. And what is the cause that initiates karma? Contact. But that's also the cause of awakening or full human maturity. Because if in this moment, as I'm coming in contact with my thoughts, words, and ideas, and the events of the world unfolding, framed by the Eightfold Path, I am no longer contributing to karma. In this moment, my mind is inclined towards awakening. Even though in this moment, my mind still might be rooted in the confusion rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, as I'm developing the Dhamma in this moment, moment by moment, I'm diminishing my karma. That past manifestation, that past motivation that's manifesting in this moment, if it's framed by the Eightfold Path, then it's inclining our mind towards awakening. This again relates to dependent origination and the importance of unraveling the links of dependent origination through right intention supported by the other seven factors of the Eightfold Path. The ongoing process of ignorance resulting in confusion and suffering can be brought to an end through wisdom through wisdom and ensuing right actions. The Buddha continues, and what is the cessation of karma? From the cessation of contact, and again, the Buddha's not saying, it relates a little bit to today, he's not saying that we should isolate ourselves and not have any contact with the world. That's ridiculous. But in the context of the Dhamma, what the Buddha is referring to, and in the context of dependent origination, it's contact rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So read this again. From the cessation of contact of a mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Let me go back one. From the cessation of contact of a mind no longer rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths comes the cessation of karma. So again, in this moment, it's what I'm holding in mind that determines the unfolding of my karma. And how does one experience a cessation of contact? Through the Noble Eightfold Path. And again, the Buddha is not teaching that we lose our senses. We simply lose the ignorance that's informing our senses and continuing our own stress and suffering. This shows that the driving force to continue confusion and suffering is described by the Buddha as karma. So karma unrestrained is simply leading to more karma. Karma that is, and we use this term often, karma that is wisely restrained in this moment by being mindful of what it is and what's occurring is the cessation of karma. This is to point out the importance of being mindful of all thoughts, words, and deeds. This is the purpose of mindfulness in the context of the Four Noble Truths. It is your actions that will determine your awakening or continued confusion and suffering. The framework for recognizing, understanding, and refining your actions is the Eightfold Path. Karma is your ego personality's experience of craving and clinging within anicca. Karma is a direct experience of the results of ignorance. I think I'm going to stop there because that's a good place to stop. Karma is a direct result of ignorance. And so if we want to end what for many of us almost seems like that movie Groundhog Day, where we keep, whether the situations are the same, we keep falling into the same emotional upsets. Keeps recurring over and over again. And it can even get annoying to the point where that same annoyance is becoming almost unbearable, the same thing. But it's us that create that experience in our own minds. Even the argument with the same person that I had yesterday, I had it again today, is a completely different experience, isn't it? See you, Kevin. Are you going? Is that why? You look like you were saying goodbye. When I finally understood what karma really meant through reading and studying what the Buddha taught and developing his Eightfold Path, I realized that understanding karma is a key to awakening, isn't it? Because it puts the mindful focus very gently on what am I doing right now? The Dhamma resolves right here and right now. It resolves within whatever actions I'm taking right now, including, and in this sense, an action is following one unrestrained thought with another, or taking the action to develop the Dhamma and learn how to, restrain my thought. Excuse me. So that's tonight's talk on karma and a little bit on rebirth. Saturday, I'll get a little bit further into rebirth. And then again, I think a few weeks after we're done with our study, I'm going to come back to this with the Karma Sutta because it's such an important sutta. But we'll go around the room, and I'm going to leave the meeting room open after we go around, and I'll stop the recording, but I'll keep the room open so we can hang out a little bit after the recording. Helen, how are you? You can unmute your mic if you want. Or I will. Helen, how are you tonight?
Hi. Hi, John. I'm fine.
Good.
The clarity of this is very helpful for me because, like many people, I had the belief that karma was beyond your control.
Yeah.
And it absolutely is all about how you respond.
So yep.
It just puts everything back in your own hands and in your own head.
Yeah.
Straighten everything out.
Where it belongs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you for your teaching.
Thank you. Everything's going good?
Yeah, I'm actually still working. The nursery is open and people are welcome to come and enjoy some fresh air and flowering trees and shrubs
and
flowers. So it's kind of a sanctuary right now.
Wow. Good for you. I'm glad you joined
Thank
us.
You.
Tom, how are you? Welcome to our Sangha, Tom. I'll unmute your mic if I can. Oh, there we go. Good. Tom is a new Sangha member. He's joining us from the Philippines. Welcome, Tom.
Hi there. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I enjoyed the talk. I guess, even not that long ago, a week or so ago, I had that feeling like, why does this always happen to me? Or that kind of feeling of, frustration at that. It is that Groundhog Day kind of scenario, which I think we all have our particular, let's say, weaknesses or sort of the cravings that are, stronger, right? For everyone has their own kind of individual experience of craving.
Yeah.
And so I think the reminder of this teaching is really helpful, but it puts the responsibility on you as an individual, but it's also quite empowering in a way.
Yeah.
And it's quite motivating to say, hey, I can, it's up to me to change this rather than sort of complaining about the world or complaining about how I am or whatever, to say, okay, well, that's how I am, but I can, in every single moment and little by little, I can be different and can sort of develop and become hopefully gradually slightly more, awakened,
yeah,
minute by minute or moment by moment. So, that's what I took from the talk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Excellent, Tom. I mean, you get it. That is the point. And it is so empowering to finally understand this. But the whole Dhamma is that way. When we really understand what the Buddha was trying to teach us, he was teaching us to empower ourselves with understanding, not to conquer the world, to be empowered by that pure knowledge of this is who I am and this is what the world is about. And that is the cessation of karma. But that understanding it brings great power. So thank you. Brett, how are you?
Unmute.
How are you, Brett?
I'm well, thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too. The teaching was really good. And I got, Tom just said, very empowering to realize that you have the power to stop the hamster wheel or the karma from from continuing to be rebirth and to be able to control your thoughts and situations so it's really good to hear that, and it is empowering because it's what I needed to hear tonight, so thank you.
Yeah, and you think about how karma is often presented, it's completely disempowering, isn't it? That I need to rely on some outside agency to determine how I'm going to feel and act and what's going to happen to me. It's an awful way of living in the world. Common too. Thank you, Brett. Tim, how are you? Out there in the stars. Tim, there you are.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Yeah, this, I really enjoyed this chapter. It really ties in, it really, for me, it really tied in the entire teaching of dependent origination. And I wrote down about 20 pages. I'll only read a couple of paragraphs.
Thanks.
what I got out of it was, like, unskillful reaction to any impermanent phenomena will result in the karmic rebirth of suffering. Dispassionately reacting to impermanent phenomena through the three factors of the Eightfold Path will break the reactive chain of dependent origination and will not give birth to the next moment rooted in ignorance, resulting in a state of tranquility and calm, non-reactive, dispassionate, spaciousness in the mind, numb to the stress embedded in permanence, in impermanence, free of all suffering and anxiety. And I really, really got that from I don't know if I'm right, if that's skillfully put.
It is.
But you kind of, before class started, I think that's what you were trying to get at, is that this precise moment that we're at, how are, you said, holding in mind, which is mindfulness, how our quality of mind is will in part dictate what our karmic response will be. And if it's non-reactive and dispassionate, we won't have that rebirth of suffering.
Yes.
So it really tied in the very complicated teaching for me of dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates and the and anatta and anicca and dukkha, all that. And it really just says, this is what will result. And I wrote down as the last thing that karma, your karma is related to your state of mindfulness.
Yep.
And so that's, and especially in today's environment, through that Eightfold Path, through discernment and following the Eightfold Path, that quality of mind will keep that tranquility and calm, and the karma that will follow will be more peaceful, more tranquil.
Really well said, Tim. I mean, you really nailed it. You understand it, and you also presented it in a way that is completely practical, because that's what karma is. So thank you so much. It was great.
Nice job, Tim. Nice job.
Andrew has joined us. So let me say hello to Andrew. How are you, Andrew?
I'm here, John. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good. Did you have any difficulty getting on?
Right.
Huh? Yeah. Hey, is that Judy?
Yeah.
Ah, how are you, Judy?
Good, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It's so nice to hear your voice and to have you join us tonight.
Same here. I miss everybody.
Yeah, I know you didn't get you didn't get much of the talk, or did you?
No.
No, we tuned in late.
Well, I'm glad you joined us. I'll have it posted later on tonight so you can catch up with it. But you're both doing well?
Yes, we are. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad you joined us tonight. Mary. How are you, Mary?
I'm good, John. Thank you for this teaching, and thank you for hosting these classes. I look forward to it, and I'm glad to be here. And welcome from the Philippines. Welcome to our Sangha. It's with ease and joy that I think about how interrupting wrong view just releases the burden of the clinging aggregates, the things that get in the way from seeing things clearly. And compared to maybe other ways that I was taught about my relationship to the world, it's so much lighter and so much freer you know, there's no guilt or blame or whatever. It's empowering, as other people have said. And it's your responsibility, but in a very empowering way. Yeah. So it's with great ease and joy. I hear and listen and learn about karma the way the Buddha taught it. So thank you, John.
Thank you, Mary. David's good?
David's good.
Good. Tell him I said hello.
I will.
How are you, Trevor?
John, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I enjoyed the talk tonight. Thanks so much. I wanted to run by you how I'm interpreting what you're saying and teaching about contact and dependent origination. So seems to me, dependent origination, is it fair to say it's about the birth and death of anatta?
Yes. Yes, the birth and death of anatta, meaning wrong views of self.
Right. So yep. In that context, I might try to paraphrase it this way, paraphrase what I'm learning from you and see if I'm getting this on the right track. I might paraphrase dependent origination to say, in ignorance, I think I am these things that I'm not, like the five clinging aggregates.
Yep.
That view of self makes contact with the world, and understanding myself in that false way, attached to these aggregates, I start to feel certain ways about it as I make contact with the world with that frame.
Yep.
Feeling certain ways about it, sometimes it feels good, sometimes not. I start clinging and I start thinking I have to have things a certain way to keep feeling good with this view of myself, for instance, as a person with feelings or perceptions, so on.
Yeah.
And then maybe I do get that thing that I want. And so that state of being comes into becoming, is given birth in a sense. But because anatta is impermanent, it inevitably dies. It ages and dies, just like everything that's impermanent. And then we'll just eventually get rebirthed again unless I break that ignorance chain.
Yes.
A fair way to understand the contact is in view of this wrong view of self.
Yes. And so then contact either becomes the vehicle for continued reaffirmation of ignorance, or it becomes the vehicle for the continued reaffirmation of awakening. And again, it takes us right back to what's occurring right here and right now. And that understanding of karma, you nailed it, Trevor. I mean, that's what it is. And so, from the framework of the Eightfold Path, then life takes on the focus or the purpose of awakening, which becomes the priority, which places that focus on what's occurring right now. And so, in this moment, I notice that my mind is disturbed. I'm going to practice the Dhamma because I understand that if I continue to react to a disturbed mind, I'm simply going to keep creating karmically another disturbed quality of mind. But in this moment, as I'm practicing the Dhamma, I can preserve my mind by being mindful. That's why that fourth foundation of mindfulness, and thank you for bringing it up, the fourth foundation of mindfulness is simply being dispassionately mindful of the present quality of our mind. That way we can understand. If I'm angry at myself for a fearful or a confused mind, I can't learn anything from it, can I? Because I'm taking it personally. But when I understand that the karmic results of a confused or disturbed mind right here and right now, I understand from dependent origination that I'm feeling that because of my own ignorance of Four Noble Truths, I'm directly pointed back to what I need to know. And I think that's what you're describing too. What I need to know in this moment is the clarity that's developed from understanding Four Noble Truths. And let me just say again, the Four Noble Truths are called Noble Truths for one reason, because they last throughout time. But really, they're noble because they relate to the Dhamma. There are four truths that relate to the Dhamma that without these four truths realized, there is no Dhamma. Again, I use the example of, it's true that the sky is blue most of the time. that just because it's a truth doesn't make it relevant to the Dhamma. It isn't, is it? But understanding this in the way that it was presented and understanding karma in the way you just described reveals the path to awakening moment by moment. So thank you, Trevor. You have any other questions?
No, that's great for now. Thanks, John.
Glad you joined us. Kevin, how are you? Hey, Kevin.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
Nice to see everybody. How you just said that the path is revealed, I was thinking along those lines as well, that dependent origination describes the process of birth and the resulting dukkha. And when there's release, that sort of inclines us towards what we call sukha, is, you know, that other state that you've described. But the kama to me feels like a linear representation, and like you said, a revealing. Like it's the way that awakening is more linear, I feel like, as you're saying, because the result of your actions is whether you're experiencing your karma or not, or you're extinguishing wrong views. So it's to me, feel has a quality like that. I don't know if that was off base or not, but I did also find a lot of similarity with the Bahiya Sutta, and when the Buddha says to Bahiya, there is no, in the Buddha's words, there is no you in connection with what is seen, heard, sensed, or cognized. There is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor there nor anywhere in between. This and only this is the end of stress and unhappiness. And that completely describes sort of the emptying of ignorance. And as Trevor was just saying, the you know, where birth is ended. There's no more birth of ignorance. There's simply the experience of life as life occurs, and we don't experience karma as suffering or as dukkha anymore.
Yes.
So I appreciate all of your thoughts. I didn't know about that first part. I didn't give you a chance to respond to that.
Well, in that same sutta, the Buddha teaches that karma is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture, which is such a good visual of what it is. We're the one that feeds our ongoing development of what we see as karma through the way we think and the continued craving for maintaining fabricated views or maintaining anatta. So again, do you see how these the terms like anatta, karma, five clinging aggregates, awakening, they all
they relate.
They relate to each other in very definite ways. But in sometimes unexpected ways, until we start understanding the Dhamma, and then we start seeing that you can resolve the Dhamma almost to any one of these terms. In other words, if you really understand karma, you understand the entire Dhamma. If you really understand anatta, that was the purpose of our 36-week study this past summer. If you really understand anatta, you understand the Dhamma. So again, there's a nexus point where all of these things join, and they join within the framework of the Eightfold Path. So thank you for what you said. Really good. Kate, how are you? You want me to? There you go. Good.
I'm good. How are you?
Good to see you, Kate.
Good to see you. Yeah, it's good to be here tonight. I've missed this for a couple of weeks, and I've really missed it. So I'm glad I'm here. So I think one of the things that you said tonight that I sort of latched on to, and I'm taking everything you're saying sort of like in the context of like this moment and what we're going through right now. And one of the things you said was, what am I bringing into this next moment, or what am I feeding? What am I injecting into this next moment? And that's something that I've really tried to keep in mind in the last couple of weeks. Like, what's happening right now, and the things that all of us are having to deal with are difficult and different and tough, but kind of concentrating on what I'm adding to it. It's that whole second arrow thing again for me.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I bringing to it that's sort of making the difficult thing even more difficult, I guess. Yeah. So that was the thing that I sort of took out of this, and yeah, I don't know what else to say.
That's beautiful, Kate. Wondering or questioning or looking at if what you're bringing into this moment is going to make the next moment difficult is karma. That's an understanding of karma. So well done. And when we understand it that way, it almost seems too simple to be useful, except that any truth has to be simple to be called a truth. Once we understand it, we understand now what karma is. It's not something that is vague. It's not something, again, that's happening to us. We understand it because we are right here, right now, tonight, developing that experience of what it means. So I'm glad you joined us, Kate. The screen bounced around a little bit, but there's Liz. Thank you, Kate. How are you, Liz? Hello, Liz.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm doing well. These are different times and changing times. So it was good to hear this piece of it all again. And it really is just a matter of being as mindful in the moment as you can be to, like Kate said, avoid that second arrow and reduce the amount of negative karma that you get in your life. So
yeah,
that's what I keep trying to do.
You do it well, my friend. Thank you, Liz. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, John.
Hello, Jane.
Hi, John. Thank you for the teaching. I don't think I could articulate any better than all the Sangha members have so far. Yeah. The important thing I got away from this is just it's what I hold in mind moment to moment is what is important. And if I'm having divine mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, then the moment's going to be peaceful. If I don't, it won't be peaceful.
Yeah. And it's just that simple. That's Dhamma practice. What's occurring right here and right now? And what is the quality of my mind? Fourth foundation of mindfulness. Thank you, Jane. Hello, Julia.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good, and yourself?
I'm good.
This is my understanding of this talk that we had today. I feel like the key to karma is in our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. It kind of comes from the first spoke of the wheel in the Eightfold Path. It's right view, right intention, right speech, and right action. And what manifests in our awareness usually comes from our intentional thoughts, our intentions. So it's something that's deeply conditioned within us. I can see all the connections, how it connects with dependent origination and everything. I'm kind of like, I know that when I first started a year ago, I would not have been able to like understand this concept. So I'm happy that I can at least understand that now. I see all the connectivity of it, you know, and also that, you know, being reactionary, making things personal, is wrong thinking, wrong intention, and just conditions and makes us have more karma in the long run. So the thing to remember is that we have to be mindful of our intentions, our thoughts, and our actions and deeds in order to, you know, not be clinging and craving, so that we can have good karma. Well, I guess karma could be, it's not good or bad, right? So
yeah, it shouldn't be seen that way. Yeah.
It depends on where you're from, right? Like where what your perception is at that time, right?
Yeah. Karma can never be good or bad. It just is.
It's just right. It comes from right view or wrong view.
Yeah, and seeing it clearly comes from the radical acceptance. So what's occurring is what's occurring. What's occurring is what's occurring because it can't be any different than what's occurring. The only thing I can change is my relationship to what's occurring.
Right. So I think I finally understand it that way, instead of the old way of karma being a punishment, you know? So this is a different way of looking at it, and it makes, this makes more sense in life, you know? Yeah.
Well, and it makes more sense in relation to the Dhamma, you know?
Yes, it does.
It, it's a powerful understanding in that way. So thank you, Julia.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, John.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Thank you for your brilliant explanation of karma. Karma.
Karma.
Just a couple of things. I don't know how well organized I am tonight, so I'm going to be all over the place, so please bear with this, okay? I'm tired of getting hit with arrows, okay?
Yeah,
arrow after arrow.
Stop shooting them.
I got more holes in me than a colander. I like the way, Trevor, I love the way you put that together, that explanation. Clear things up very much.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, the aggregates along with dependent origination, it's such a hard thing to kind of like understand in a very logical and, logical way. And I think you did an excellent job doing that. I appreciate that. I'm sure it helped everyone in this class tonight. So again, thank you for that. Also, I just like to mention that, like, I like so much how this sangha tonight is so well focused, where everyone's like spot on, sticking to the subject, and we're really focusing here. And when we're focusing like that, you know, all of us gain from that.
Yeah.
We all, you know what I'm saying? We all like can get a better understanding, and I really appreciate that. So. That being focused is so important. I like a couple of things in the book here, and I'm just going to go to page 265. It'll be considered third paragraph down. Your experience of the unfolding of your karma is not predetermined. The state or quality of your mind in each moment determines your experience of karma unfolding.
Yeah.
A reactive mind will further karma. A mind of equanimity will bring a peaceful experience of karma unfolding and avoid additional karma. The state of quality of our mind is such an important aspect of the Dhamma, knowing where it is at each moment of our day. And I like this where it says a reactive mind will further karma. A reactive mind is a mind that's reacting to reacting to distraction. Yeah, I'm not creating a rap song here, but as they say, that, you know, distraction is what causes us to be reactive, and that reactivity unsettles the mind. Okay, so if we can develop to the point of being non-reactive, and again, there's that word dispassion, it will lead to equanimity. Okay. Also, the Eightfold Path. My goodness, how important is it to understand how the Eightfold Path unfolds, especially from the very first, very first part of the Eightfold Path is right view. You know, right view sets everything in motion, so to say. You know, it's like it said, hey, you know, whatever you hear in this moment here, whatever's distracting your mind. The dependent origination and five clinging aggregates. Once you have right view, you understand all of that, and you understand that they're caused because of wrong view. Okay, so I totally get the importance of the Eightfold Path is paramount here, and obviously if we follow through with the Eightfold Path, again, this is a it'll actually enable us to purify the mind, to make the mind pure. And then once we're at that point in time, making the mind pure, where that's the calmness that we need, and the understanding and again, the view of the world and ourselves in the world. So that we should have, or I believe that we should have. So that's what I got out of this. I'm sorry if it was a little bit all over the place, but you know,
thank you, Michael. And really what you're referring to is that the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the quality of our mind. And as we awaken, we learn to be at peace with whatever that quality of mind is. Another way to say that that fourth foundation of mindfulness is also anatta, five clinging aggregates, karma, because it's all part of that same experience, isn't it? When I'm at peace with the present quality of my mind, which doesn't mean, you know, just a little bit more of an explanation on that. When I think about the quality of my mind from my mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, the quality of my mind is very narrow. It's one experience. It's whatever I think at that moment is happiness or whatever that might be. And it excludes anything else that does not fit into that view, does it? But when I let go of the views, then in this moment, my right view is what's occurring right now is what's occurring. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not what I want or need. It's simply me, a human being, living its life. That's a human being who has freed themselves of karma. It wasn't some outside agency that freed me of it. It was my understanding, my thinking, my knowledge, my understanding of the reality of human life. That's what the Buddha taught. When we don't understand who we are in relation to the world we're living in, we create karma moment by moment. When we understand it, karma ceases.
Thank you. Yeah. Again,
a great class. I'm going to end the recording in just a minute. There was something else I want. Our spring retreat has been officially canceled. So we're looking at our fall retreat. I will just simply apply your reservations to the fall retreat. But if you can't attend the fall, just send me an email and I'll start the refund process. But I hope you can all make it. But I just heard that today. I think that was the only thing. Yeah, so again, just getting back to this karma and rebirth, we're going to touch more on rebirth on Saturday. But the mindfulness as it applies to this is just to be mindful in this moment, because that's our karma. And if in this moment I'm judging myself or others harshly, or even the conditions of the world, then I've literally lost my mind and I'm creating more karma. But in this moment, if no matter what's occurring, I can maintain a calm and peaceful mind, then I will no longer contribute to another moment. I will never give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. I'll start inclining my mind towards awakening. And that's the takeaway from this. So again, just thank you all, and really just great, brilliant comments. So let me end the recording. And
thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.